Headlines Iran says it seeks to promote cooperation with neighboring as well as Persian Gulf countries to establish lasting security in the region. Canadian police say a shooting in the suburbs of Toronto has left five people dead amid mounting gun violence in Canada in recent years. And several French cities witnessed clashes between police and football fans following France's defeat in the dramatic World Cup final against Argentina. Welcome to the world news from the reigning capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Iran says it seeks to promote cooperation with its neighbors and Persian Gulf countries to establish lasting security in the region. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian says Tehran is ready to host foreign and defense ministers of regional countries to discuss security issues. He says Iran has repeatedly announced its readiness to build trust and cooperate with its neighbors. The top diplomat also says regional countries should abandon reliance on foreign powers for their security once and for all. Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in an address to the third edition of the Tehran Dialogue Forum. This year's initiative is focused on Iran's policy toward its neighbors. It has been attended by 70 officials and representatives from 36 countries. Tehran has dismissed as unfounded claims by the head of the U.S. spy agency regarding Iran-Russia cooperation over the Ukraine war. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said baseless accusations leveled against Iran by the CIA over the Ukraine conflict are part of Washington's propaganda campaign against Iran. He said as part of their groundless political claims and illegal moves, U.S. authorities question conventional Iran-Russian defense and military cooperation. The spokesman noted this PR exercise by the White House is based on lies and deception and comes with different aims, namely exerting political pressure on Iran, provoking Iranophobia, and covering up Washington's warmongering. Kanani reiterated Tehran-Moscow cooperation on different fronts, including in the defense domain, is in line with the two nations' common interests. He said the two sides are expanding their cooperation in compliance with their rights and international commitments. Afghans are calling for an independent and transparent investigation into dozens of summary killings by the UK's Special Air Service troops in Afghanistan after years of reports that elite British forces killed civilians in cold blood. Press TV's Rahmatullah Bakhban reports from Kabul.
Afghan people have been calling for transparent and impartial investigations into crimes and wrongdoings by NATO forces on their soil. Among them, relatives of victims of the NATO war in southern Helmand province are demanding justice for the killing of 54 unarmed people by British Special Air Service troops there. The dead include children. Afghans want the murderers should be held accountable.
Helmand province witnessed deadly night raids and airstrikes by NATO forces, especially those of the UK. Besides, civilian captives were tortured and shot dead. In one case, children were thrown off military planes. I remember so many atrocities by the foreign forces in which civilians were harmed. We call for those British and American perpetrators to be tried in an impartial and transparent court. They should be brought to account and victims should receive compensation.
The U.S. invasion of our country was a mistake. The United States and its allies are to blame for the devastation and mass killings of our people in different provinces in the past 20 years. Only in Helmand, where I used to live, 9,000 innocent people lost their lives during the U.S. invasion. Why? Weren't they human beings? Didn't they have the right to live in their country? Today we call on them to pay the price for their mistake and help those whose livelihoods were devastated.
However, the UK government has announced the start of an inquiry into wrongdoings by its forces in Afghanistan, but some experts say only transparent probes by independent bodies can help make headway with the case. They believe investigations by foreign governments could cover up the facts about the gross violations at the hands of their forces in Afghanistan.
NATO troops, in fact, committed thousands of war crimes in Afghanistan. In order to hide their scandals and whitewash their disgraceful history, they claim to have voluntarily launched an inquiry. Such fake probes can also be used to distort public opinion and manipulate media and international rights bodies. In addition, they are likely to probe selected cases rather than real shocking incidents. I mean, they would single out a certain case of misconduct from among hundreds of terrifying rights violations so that their forces do not face heavy charges.
During the two-decade U.S. invasion, Afghanistan witnessed much disgrace by NATO troops. More and more facts are emerging regarding unlawful killings and gross violations by foreign forces on Afghan soil. The U.S. war on Afghanistan has left many Afghans in great suffering. People here are calling for accountability and justice for years of gross violation by the NATO troops. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Canadian police say five people have been shot dead and another has been wounded in the suburbs of Toronto. Police say the suspect is also shot dead after an exchange of fire with officers in an apartment building. The motive of the shooter is still unknown. Police have evacuated the area where the shooting took place. They are investigating the incident. Canada has witnessed mounting gun violence in recent years in one of the deadliest such incidents. An assailant posing as a police officer killed 22 people in the eastern province of Nova Scotia in April 2020. Streets of France after the country's football team lost the FIFA World Cup title. Clashes broke out in the capital, Paris, as well as in Lyon, among other cities. In Paris, scuffles erupted as police charged into the crowd to disperse bystanders. Also in Lyon, police used water cannons and tear gas to push back a mob which fought back, hurling projectiles that the officials say 15 people were arrested. France were beaten by Argentina on penalties in the final match of the FIFA World Cup on Sunday. Ukraine says Russia has carried out another drone attack against key infrastructure in the capital, Kiev. Local officials claim over 20 drones were deployed in the strike. They say most of the aircraft were brought down. Kiev's mayor says the attack damaged the critical infrastructure, but there are no known casualties. This comes as Russian President Vladimir Putin is about to travel to Belarus. Russian forces are now stationed there as part of a joint regional force and are due to hold military exercises. Kiev is now warning that Belarusian forces could join the Russian war in Ukraine. Belarus denies any such plan. Russia is also planning to hold joint naval drills with China in the coming days. Russia's defense ministry says the maneuvers are aimed at strengthening mutual naval cooperation. Russia says it has shot down four U.S.-made missiles fired by Ukraine over the southern Belgrade region. We'll bring you more details on that as we get it. It's time now for our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. The United Kingdom has confirmed delivery of another military aid package to Ukraine nearly 10 months into the Moscow-Kiev war. The British Ministry of Defense says the new package includes two precision-guided Brimstone missiles. The anti-tank weapons are capable of salvo attacks and autonomously finding targets once it reaches a designated target area. The ministry says the aid could play a crucial role in stalling Russian advances into Ukrainian territory. The new UK military aid comes as the West has already provided Kiev with billions of dollars worth of military aid to boost Ukraine's defense capabilities. Russia has warned time and again that continued supply of Western weapons and equipment to Kiev will only prolong the war. So joining us is Robert Carter, our correspondent in the British capital, London, And we also have Fra Hughes, a journalist, author and activist from Belfast. That's the capital of Northern Ireland. Gentlemen, welcome. So, Robert, if I start with you, we saw these brimstone missiles being used in action in Iraq and Syria. We're not with questions about their reliability, but the wider pumping and shipping of weapons into the war zone, how is it going to bring an end to an energy winter crisis that is being felt across the European continent, not only in the UK?
It's an interesting point, and one that isn't really being addressed here in the UK, at least not for the time being. This particular debate around the British economy and the hardships that UK citizens are going through is mostly an issue which has been internalized here, and there isn't much commentary regarding how some of this may be as a result of what's going on in Ukraine, and certainly is. But the British government has actually issued strange comments on occasion, basically criticizing trade union bosses here in the UK and their strike action as being something which would please Moscow and Putin, as it ultimately applies further pressure on the British government during this ongoing conflict. So that is the only way in which it's been covered so far from inside the UK. And it is very interesting because ultimately Britain has found the money and the resources available to keep fueling conflict in Ukraine, but yet is telling British taxpayers that they're going to have to tighten their belts. They're basically on their own during the colder months of this Christmas, and they're just going to have to fend for themselves and put up with an increase in daily costs, an increase in fuel costs, and also, of course, a lack of increase in wages in many sectors as well. So ultimately, this is a point which may get mentioned further down the line when a protest here in the UK continues to intensify, and possibly in the lead up to the next election, this point could be raised about Britain's foreign policy, British foreign spending, and the lack of willingness to spend here internally in order to prop up struggling British citizens.
Right. London says these weapons will play a crucial role in stalling Russian advances on Ukrainian territories. I thought the West said Ukraine was on the offensive and that it was advancing and that Russian troops were retreating. What happened there?
Well, it's all part of the propaganda war where Western mainstream media is telling us that Ukraine is winning the war. This is for the internal kind of population of the United Kingdom, Western Europe, United States, Canada, and Australia. It is a narrative whereby if people are suffering because of the energy crisis and rising inflation, fuel costs and food costs, that somehow, you know, like the war will be by Christmas seems to be some of the mentality that's involved in this. But if we actually look at what else the British government is involved in when it comes to the Ukraine, on one level, they're supplying these arms in an effort, a long-term goal and a long-term effort to destabilize, cripple, and reduce Russia and the Russian Federation to a balkanized series of federal states where Western corporations can then go in and cherry-pick the natural resources and assets that belong to the people of Russia and the Russian Federation. But, I mean, Britain and specifically MI6 stand accused of being involved in the bombing of the Crimea Bridge. Now, that's one step further than sending munitions and weapons to Ukraine, supposedly for self-defense. Liz Truss, the shortest reigning Prime Minister in British history, purportedly sent a text to Anthony Blinken shortly after the Nord Stream 2 pipeline sabotage attack, saying job done. So Britain is not only sending arms and sending equipment to Ukraine, it is playing an active part in the war to try and destroy the Russian Federation. And we have in Belfast, we have a company, Thales, are Thales, and they are the eighth largest military company in the world, logistically, for making missiles. So these missiles are made in Belfast. Recently, about 6 months ago, Rishi Sunak visited the company, visited their headquarters, stood with a Javelin missile on his shoulder, modelling it, and then about a week later, Right. We had an Anatov plane come from Ukraine to pick up military equipment to take to Kiev. So Britain is up to their arms, literally, in the arms trade.
North Korea says it has conducted what it calls an important final phase test for the development of a spy satellite it seeks to complete by April next year. Pyongyang says it launched the satellite on Sunday from a station in the northwestern part of the country. It says the test was aimed at reviewing the country's capability of satellite imaging, data transmission and ground control systems. This comes a day after the South Korean and Japanese militaries reported the North fired two ballistic missiles into the Sea of Japan. Pyongyang has carried out a slew of missile tests this year. It says these are in response to the United States' growing presence in the region and its joint military drills with South Korea and Japan. That brings an end to the International Bulletin.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
When it comes to the relationship between the U.S. and the EU, things are not as black and white as they appear to be. Both may be united when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, but when it comes to trade, there are divisions. For example, the EU does not believe the U.S. should have economic incentives to entice European companies to set up shop in the U.S. And on China, the U.S. wants the EU to step back, but the EU can't afford it. That is the topic of today's program. Now, some of the highlights of this program that will be coming up: the U.S. pressure on EU, an anti-China policy is what the U.S. would like the EU to pursue, but the EU says it has its own China policy, and it will resist the U.S. pressure on that front. But to what degree? That's the question. Next, another highlight in terms of EU-China trade. China is the third largest buyer of European goods, and China, well, it's the most important market for imported EU products. Will that be the direction that the EU will take in terms of making its decision on this? We have to wait and see. Something that will be coming up later in the program. And then the U.S. anti-China stance. Beijing is a growing threat to U.S. companies, and it's pushing EU to use export control against China. Again, to what degree?
As tensions rise between the West and Russia, the U.S. is pushing the EU to toe the line on China. For years, Western countries have raised the alarm bells over the rise of China. The East Asian nation has been making steady economic progress for decades. It has also made significant gains in the fields of technology, science, and telecommunications. Beijing is now a giant producer in microchips. These developments have made Washington and its Western allies concerned. They fear that China's progress and its alliance with other emerging nations like Russia and Iran will dent the West hegemony.
I had a long meeting with Xi Jinping at the G20. We have met for over 80 hours over the last 10 years. We know each other well, and he's a little upset that we're deciding we're going to once again be, you know, and so are European friends. They're talking about the supply chain. We're going to be the supply chain. The difference is going to be we're going to make that supply chain available to the rest of the world, but we're not going to be held hostage anymore.
The U.S. is now pushing the EU, following its anti-Beijing policies. U.S. officials have told European counterparts to consider using export control restrictions on China. But the question is that the bloc cannot afford a confrontational approach towards China. The European Union has described China as a strategic rival, but it is pursuing a different approach from the U.S. Analysts say instead of decoupling from China, the EU is pursuing to de-risk its relations with Beijing. Decoupling refers to the separation of economic ties between the two superpowers, but for the EU, this is not in its interest.
When it comes to online media posts on this, it was quite actually amazing to see that many users many people who are online tweeting or posting on this are aware of what is happening between the EU and the U.S., especially when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine. So let's see if the ones that we picked for you actually show that. First up, the first post says, while the U.S. has started to increase pressure on EU allies to align more closely with its hard line on China, Europeans have been pushing back. Now, taking a look at this website, we went in a little deeper, why Western leaders are deeply divided on how to deal with China. Now, this was the entry was made on December the 1st, keep in mind. It said European Council President Charles Michel heads to Beijing on December 1st, the latest in a procession of Western leaders to seek an audience with Xi Jinping, the Chinese president. The United States are our most important ally, but in some cases, we will not be in the same position or on the same approach towards China. Next up, another sign that the EU will never help us put pressure on China. The EU and China agreed to work together to address global food insecurity after holding a bilateral meeting on trade and financial services. The next tweet, while the U.S. has started to increase pressure on EU allies to align more closely with its hard line on China, Europeans have been pushing back. There have been reports about Dutch concerns over new U.S. export restrictions to China. So there you have it. Again, this showed, these posts that we picked, how there is pushback coming from the EU when it comes to the U.S. Let's find out what our guests think in our first segment of the Q&A. Let me introduce them. Dr. Kui Hongjian joins us. He's the head of the European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies. Dr. Kui Hongjian, welcome to Economic Divide. The head of the U.S., that is, wants the EU to be strict with China. That we know. Europe says, well, we can't afford that. And while the European Union has dubbed China as a strategic rival, maybe following the U.S. line there, is pursuing a different approach than what the U.S. wants it to. Because for starters, China is the third largest buyer of European goods. Why should the EU listen to the U.S. when it comes to this issue?
On one hand, there are very natural tendencies between three economies to have closer cooperation in trade investment. But on the other hand, as we know, if you just look at something from so-called geopolitical views, especially there are a lot of the efforts from the United States try to have some more competition or even confrontation against China. So I think it will be also a more difficult situation for the European Union. As we know, mostly European Union try to always take use of its power as economy and also called a soft power or some other. So I think, yes, there will be some difficult question for European Union.
Indeed. Well, let me bring in our next guest. We have the pleasure of having him on this program, Dr. Ema McKinney. He's an eminent sinologist, editor and writer at Strategic Culture Foundation in Moscow. He's got quite a sheet here in terms of his bio. He's also the director of the CBN Global. He's a writer at the Financial Times, writer for The Economist, and also a Nobel Prize nominee. Dr. Ema McKinney, welcome to Economic Divide. Thanks for joining us. We're looking at how the U.S. wants the EU to have a different approach than it currently has, wants the EU to slow down in terms of trade, for example. That's the bulk of what the U.S. wants from the EU. And perhaps to gravitate back to the U.S. is something that the U.S. wants the EU to do. But at the same time, the EU doesn't want to go through the decoupling process that the U.S. Wants it to, the way the U.S. is doing with China. Why should the EU listen to the U.S. in the first place when it comes to, for example, trade?
Well, I think the business community in the EU is very much against not just this anti-China stance, because they've profited from it immensely, but also the Ukrainian war. So if we're talking about the EU is a particular institution. It doesn't necessarily represent the business community. It's populated largely with ideologues. Scholz recently from Germany has been over there trying to make friends again, and then as soon as he leaves he makes some sort of statement to please the Americans. So it doesn't appear to be going anywhere.
The Info News section of the program is upon us, and we have chosen, as usual, four topics in order to review and give you what's going on with these issues. First up, something that has happened that is quite unbelievable, and it's been committed by the Bank of England. Now, according to this piece of news, it has overcharged, but the amount is incredible. It has caused havoc as a result of what's called error costs, and it will cost taxpayers £200 billion. And the caption read, "Now we all pay." It went on to say years of low interest rates and virtual money printing through quantitative easing looks set to land taxpayers with a massive bill. Nobody issued a warning on that. All right, this particular visit made lots of noise in so many ways. The Chinese President Xi Jinping in Saudi Arabia, based on the three-day visit that he had there, Saudi Arabia laid out a lavish welcome as the Chinese president heralded what he called was a new era in relations, of course, despite U.S. wariness, as the U.S. looked on to this visit. Now, the Chinese president and the Saudi King Salman signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. End deals was reported to be worth around $30 billion, but I'm sure the relationship is going to give a lot more or add a lot more to that figure. And keep a note on another development that came out of this summit, and that was the fact that the Chinese president Xi Jinping said that some portions of the sales of oil to Saudi Arabia will occur in yuan, something that we have said before in this program, that we covered in this program from before. The UK is experiencing something that is really bad. It concerns food banks. There are now more food banks in the UK than there are McDonald's, and that's a terrible sign of how bad the economy is doing there, and of course how people are dealing with the soaring food prices and inflation as a result. Soaring inflation and energy price hikes is forcing more Britons to rely on food aid in order to avoid starvation. Based on the counts that we got, more than 2 million people are depending on food aid in the UK. And finally, taking a look at the unemployment rate in the United States. Now, the unemployment claims are the highest since the month of February, as reports of major layoffs are beginning to grow. They actually were reported that that would happen, but now we're seeing that, we're witnessing that. There are reports of widespread layoffs in technology firms that we have seen to have happened, firms like Meta or Facebook and Amazon, for example, or other tech firms. And also, it has engulfed major corporations, leading to a sustained decline in the labor market as a result. All right, those four pieces of news with what we picked for you.
Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth section of the program is upon us. The notion of the U.S. even suggesting to the EU that it should distance itself from China, especially when it comes to trade, puts into question whether the U.S. either has enough influence over the EU and what that influence could be. However, this is a case where the numbers really do speak for themselves, as we're about to find out. First up, let's take a look at the trade balance between the EU and China. We looked at data for the year 2019, that's before COVID hit, to get a more realistic understanding. EU exports to China stood at almost 200 billion euros, while EU imports from China stood at 362 billion euros. That left a deficit of 164 billion euros. Moving up next, in terms of the products or what types of products were exchanged or were traded, EU's top three imported categories of goods from China, well, 54% were machinery and vehicles, 37% other manufactured goods, and 5% were chemicals. Now, the top three exported goods, 55% were machinery, and that's really important, 18% other manufactured goods, and then 14% for chemicals. In terms of the EU-US trade balance, it's worth taking a look at. Does the EU want it, or the U.S. want the EU to trade more with it than China? Well, you bet it does. I mean, EU exports to the U.S. for the year 2020 stood at 353.4 billion euros, while EU imports from the U.S. stood at 202.9 billion euros. That left the trade surplus of 150.5 billion euros. Now, in terms of China's major trading partners, let's look at that from the Chinese side. ASEAN countries came in at number one, and then the EU at number two, with the U.S. coming in at number three. Okay, so very evident the importance that both China and the EU have for each other. So how can the U.S. then ask the EU to abandon China or to even lessen trade with China? Now, on moving along those lines, let's take a look at Chinese trade in the first 2 months of 2022. To further drive this point home, is foreign trade in the first 2 months of 2022, well, the EU came in at number one. I mean, what a bounce back from COVID-19. It registered $137.16 billion, with the U.S. coming in at second. Okay, so there you have the Chinese angle to this whole story. All right, so there you have the figures, especially from the Chinese side towards the end there. Let me reintroduce our guest for a breakdown, Dr. Kui Hoon John, head of European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies, rejoins us. Dr. Kui Hoon John, welcome back. Taking a look at the French president's visit to the U.S. due to this Inflation Reduction Act, which has threatened Europe and European industries, in particular factories. Europe accuses the U.S. of profiting from war, and you have EU officials who have also attacked practically Joe Biden over these sky-high gas prices. Has Europe finally woken up and smelled the coffee there?
I think the European Union realized the real situation, especially its relations with the United States. It is not on this moment. Also, years ago, the European Union and especially some major member states like France. They raised the issue of to build up a kind of European strategic autonomy. I think it's a very, very big showcase for European Union, for the European countries to understand that they could not depend on the United States in the security area, in economic and trade and some other. So to get some more, to get some more independence from this, from its relations with the United States, I think it's a very, very, obvious tendency for the European Union, for most of the European countries.
All right, Dr. Imoan McKinney rejoins us, eminent sinologist, editor and writer at Strategic Culture Foundation in Moscow. Dr. Imoan McKinney, welcome back. We keep hearing about the EU not having independence and that the U.S. actually dictates the EU's direction, but how is that done? Does the U.S. have that much of a stranglehold on Europe?
I think the thing about it is the European community itself, it doesn't have any independence anymore. Its policy is dictated by America. I mean, the EU has been impoverished by everything that they're doing. And there doesn't seem to be any pushback from any of these linguistic leaders in the EU. The EU is being treated by America as another sacrifice zone ready for plunder once it's been destroyed, just like they did with Eastern Europe with their shock therapy in the 1990s. And I think it's lining up exactly the same thing for Ukraine and then Germany and the rest of Europe. I don't think that the European Union has the backbone to stand up to America, quite frankly.
But when you want to take a look at to what degree Europe is going to keep listening to the U.S., that's the question. I mean, is it going to be to the point that it's going to fall off an economic cliff? I mean, is that how intimidated the EU is from the U.S. that it's willing to risk its independence and its union?
Will Europe cut its own throat? It's already doing that. China is one of the few growth markets left in the world, and to cut yourself off from that makes about as much economic sense as supporting the war in the Ukraine. It's a complete act of madness and self-destruction.
According to data, in 2021, China was the third largest buyer of European goods. It was also the most important market for imported EU products. The importance of China for the EU has become more crucial since the bloc's economy is struggling from the conflict in Ukraine. Tensions between the EU and Russia have restricted EU's trade options, and that is the reason why the bloc cannot lose a huge trading partner. Just recently, the European Council President Charles Michel visited China to make sure that trade ties between Beijing and Brussels would improve when China lifts its anti-COVID restrictions. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz also traveled to China in early November to cement business relations. The improvement in ties comes at a time when relations between the U.S. and the EU has turned a bit sour.
I think we have very clearly defined our, if I could frame it, manifold relationship to China. And you know the three elements, indeed, they are constructive parts, they are competitive parts, and they are clear rivalry parts in it.
It has been argued that the U.S. is using the war in Ukraine for its own advantage. By pumping more weapons into Ukraine, the U.S. is actually prolonging the conflict there. The war has turned into an opportunity for the U.S. to push the EU to follow Washington's policies. Furthermore, President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act has turned Europeans angry. The act promotes U.S. businesses at the expense of Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. turning Europe into a vassal state is what I would like to talk about here and ask whether that has happened or not. The Russia-Ukraine war, which had U.S. planned since Crimea became part of Russia, achieved several goals for the U.S., which turning into the EU into a vassal state was one of them. But what is the definition of vassal? Simply put, a vassal is one in a subservient or subordinate position. The U.S. goal in the Ukraine conflict was to destabilize and weaken Russian military and economically as a geopolitical force in Europe. It then wanted to isolate Russia completely from the rest of Europe. One of the ways which it achieved that was to militarily encircle Russia through the NATO expansion. This involved the placement of American forces and weapons in European countries, while at the same time using scaremongering into making European countries think they could be next after Ukraine. These European nations surrendered significant portions of their sovereignty to the US, which provided them with military protection under the guise of NATO. And the US itself, let's not forget, the US has several dozen army, air force, and naval bases and thousands of soldiers stationed in several EU countries. But the US needed something else to make sure that the EU became a vassal state, and that was economic domination. This is where the energy part comes in. A natural consequence of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine was that the prices of energy commodities shot up. From gas to oil, European countries are still struggling to find alternatives. Just recently, the EU applied a $60 price cap on Russian oil, a move rejected by Russia outright. This was seen as a move to please the US and no one else, since Putin's war budget won't take a hit from oil price cap, since price ceiling were near market levels and it wouldn't hit ruble revenues much. And although it may be easier to find alternatives for oil, gas would be a different matter altogether. Russia was supplying EU countries with 40% of their natural gas. The US made sure this would be cut off indefinitely, making good on the US President Joe Biden's threat on damaging the Nord Stream gas pipeline, even though the European Union has said it will cut gas imports from Russia by two-thirds over the coming year. By cutting gas usage by 15% over the next 7 months, it would still suffer both from residential use and industrial use. The verdict is out on whether the EU's efforts to have gas supplies from producers such as the US and Qatar will pay off. The problem is there aren't enough LNG terminals in Europe to fulfill Europe's gas needs. So when you have rely on the US for your security needs and energy and economic needs, as in the case of the EU, you are left in a precarious situation, which is why the EU has been called a vassal state of the US. That's the end of this segment of the program.
We've already told you how the EU is subservient to the US. The US goal of breaking the EU apart, from the looks of it, is in full swing, and it continues, since when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, there are no signs that it's going to end anytime soon. And a final blow could come in the form of China, since the US wants to do to China what it's done to Russia, albeit at a slower pace maybe. But nevertheless, China being a target, maybe that's why it is telling the EU to slow down trade with China. That does it for this edition of the program. Again, great to have you with us week in, week out. Fumiko Watabe and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity.
شیخ قاسم محمدی.
اعوذ بالله من الشیطان الرجیم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم و به نستعین و صل الله علی محمد و اهل بیت الطیبین الطاهرین. اللهم صل علی محمد و آل محمد و عجل فرجهم. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته. You are tuned to IRIB Radio and this is for humanity. In this program, inshallah, we're going to try to know, or in other words, to sort of recognize the human nature, also human characteristics, talents, obstacles that may be in the way to human beings' growth, and in general, to examine the reality of human being, especially based on the Quran and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam. But the question that is very important before starting the discussion that must be answered is, why is this topic important? Why is it important for us to know the reality of human being and to broaden our understanding about man in different aspects? The answer to this question would be that by using the power of understanding and our cognitive faculty, we are able to make ourselves aware of various things. For example, knowing nature, knowing living things in nature, knowing non-living things and inanimate objects, knowing the earth, knowing the universe, and the likes. But in fact, there are sciences dealing with all the forced topics, and for sure all of them are important. But which of these knowledges or sciences is more important? The answer to this question, I believe, is what we have to lose by not knowing this information, and the harm or loss that we sustain by not caring about such knowledge gives us the answer. So the greater the amount of loss in not knowing a subject is, the more important that knowledge would be, and the more priority it has to be known. Okay, with this introduction, I believe that it should be known that it seems that the most important, or at least one of the most important issues, that by not knowing which there is a great possibility of harm for us, is the knowledge about the reality of human being. The other issue is knowledge about God, of course. And in general, such philosophical questions are at the top of the list of important things to know, because the lack of knowledge about these matters put us in grave danger, or at least a very likely grave dangers. So, for example, in theology, there is an argument for the existence of God, known in the West as Pascal wager, which is, of course, mentioned in the words of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salatu was-salam, including Imam al-Sadiq and also Imam al-Ridha, alayhim as-salatu was-salam, which is an argument based on probabilities. And this explanation that we gave just now also is of this nature. It's a sort of probabilistic explanation. So The issue of human knowledge is of much importance, because if a person does not achieve a correct knowledge of himself or herself, he or she will be in a very, possibility of being in danger in his or her life. Okay, so let's have a short break, and inshallah, we're going to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Dear brothers and sisters, we've been talking about the necessity and actually the importance of the topic of knowing oneself and knowing the nature and the reality of human being. And the last point we mentioned was that the way that we can infer that this issue is so important and is of much importance is that by losing, this knowledge, and by not having this knowledge and lacking this knowledge, there are possible dangers that we might be endangered with. And that is why that rationally we have to care about such knowledges more than other knowledges. So in one word, man's lack of proper knowledge of themselves and of their nature and reality, and also of their potentials and characteristics, and similarly their lofty and important goals, as well as the knowledge of the obstacles and dangers that may exist for their perfection and kamal, cause them to fall, and al-ayadu billah, destruction, and will cause them irreparable personal and social problems, both for themselves and also for others. The fundamental individual or social problems, various political and economic anomalies in countries also can be traced back to the fact that they have made a mistake in their humanology or, their knowledge about human being and the reality of human being. And, this understanding about humanity, that is just a material being, and having this completely materialistic worldview about human being has been, the source and the origin of much, if not all, of those problems that we talked about, especially problems in decision-making, especially in the arena of international affairs. So, those people who make a decision to wage a war against a nation, if the worldview or the humanology that they have about human being, the understanding that they have about human being, is a wrong one, and is based on a wrong worldview, and the understanding is a dangerous one, it could end up, waging war and killing many people, hundreds of thousands, souls. So this shows that how important this issue is. And on the other hand, the monotheistic point of view with respect to the reality of humanity that we believe in, we believe that it can guarantee the growth of man and the society both, in all aspects, but of course if applied and if it is realized in the practical realm. And the most important, for example, issue regarding the Quran and the Quranic view on the reality of man is the two-dimensionality of man, that man is consisted of two dimensions. It's not just a material body, and it's both spiritual and also material. And priority and superiority of the spiritual realm that the soul of man has. So, inshallah, we're going to talk about these issues, especially from the Quranic point of view, and also the view that has been elaborated in the traditions and the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt in the coming sessions. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillah rabbil alameen. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.